Blog Talk Radio.
Another Hard Hits pregame show. A couple of nights later, 48 hours later to be exact, I am your host, Derek Fields of the Hard Hits Network. And we've got a good 30-minute live sports podcast. And we're going to be doing a lot of previewing, a lot of stuff on the NBA. A big game two for the Houston Rockets, looking to bounce back from a very poor effort against the Golden State Warriors in Game 1. And they're looking to bounce back tonight in a huge Game 2, pivotal Game 2, especially with them already losing the home court, and they do not want to go down two games. We're also going to review another impressive Celtics victory over the Cleveland Cavaliers, which was basically, and looks like, a two-man team, with LeBron James doing what he could do, scoring 42 points, getting a triple-double with the assists, the rebounds, but not enough as he got a little tired in the second half. And Kevin Love did what he could do also with a double-double, over 20 points, 14 or 15 rebounds, but not enough as the Celtics wore down the Cavs and broke them down. So we're going to talk about that. And is it over for the Cavs, or can they go home and win two and hold serve, as LeBron said? Plus, some NHL as well, a guarantee that I made the other night on this Hard Hit show, and it came true. And that was the Vegas Golden Knights winning Game 2. JPG challenged me, and the Golden Knights came through. I did say 4-3. The Vegas Golden Knights did it even more impressively, only allowing one goal in Winnipeg. And evening the series in Game 3 is tonight. They're less than an hour away, about an hour away, actually, from face-off. Be facing off in about an hour. Game 3 in Vegas, that should be a great scene. Golden Knights and Winnipeg Jets. And we'll also talk a little bit about the Lightning being able to win a game they really had to win. They had to win the game. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. After losing the first two games to the Caps, and it looking like the Caps were just much better, and they were much better, only allowing one even straight goal, the Lightning, they had to get Game 3 in Washington. And so far, the road teams prevailed all three games. If you're a Caps fan, you got to be a little concerned because the Caps' history, they haven't blown a lot of 2-0 leads, okay? But they did blow 1-2 lead to the Lightning, but that was way back. All right, that was way back before Ovechkin, before Kuznetsov. So the thing is, I'm curious to see how the Caps will bounce back, actually, because the Lightning now have the momentum. They now know that they've made it a series, and the Lightning winning 4-2. So we'll talk about that as well. I'm going to start with the basketball, and then we'll get to the hockey. All right, so this is a short, abbreviated edition of Hard Hits, and if we have time, I'll even maybe get into some baseball. Or I could do some overtime. Overtime is obviously after the half an hour ends, or we allot enough time. And overtime, I can still do overtime and talk extra until about 9 o'clock, which is perfect because that's when the games start. So if you are listening to this podcast for the first time, you want to catch overtime, which is not live, catch it on your own time, and you can listen to the whole show. But let's start with the Rockets and Golden State Warriors. To be honest, let's go with that one right now, because that's the one that intrigues me the most. And it's nothing against the other series. That was very interesting to watch. That was a fun watch last night. I will say that. Seeing the Celtics come back that way and play a terrific second half. But yeah, you watch Cleveland and it's just not a complete team. I mean, it's basically LeBron and Kevin Love. He did his thing as well. But they're not that fun. Whereas the Celtics are, they're a team in the sense of the word team. All five starters in double digits, unselfish. They play hard at both ends, and they just wore them out. They wore them down. So, now, game one, Rockets and Warriors, it did not go too well for the Rockets. They started out really well. They started out, 11-2, and they looked great in the first quarter, but... Look, when you play the Golden State Warriors, who have Kevin Durant, the best player in the series, in my opinion, second best player in the league, I do apologize to James Harden, who with MVP, and you can see why when you see how much work he did in game one, all the dribbling and the pick and rolls and the shooting and the driving and the dishing. I mean, he is basically the offense, with to an extent, Chris Paul, I didn't think had that good at first game. So, the thing is, you can't really breathe. You can't take a breather against the Golden State Warriors. They're relentless. They can turn a 10-11-point deficit into a 2-3-point lead like that in the blink of an eye. We've seen it before, and we saw it again the other night. We saw it again the other night, and they're 119-106 win. State Warriors did not get the great start. Draymond Green got teed up early. He almost could have been ejected, but he was not. Actually, I think it was better to not eject him there. I think that would have been a little overkill there. The thing about Dray Green, he doesn't need to score. He doesn't need to score to be effective. Yeah, you know, you looked at the box score, and he had 2 points, but he had 9 rebounds and had 9 assists, played strong defense, and I think he was the highest plus minus for the Warriors. He was like a plus 14. So, and that's the thing. That is the thing about Dray Green. He can frustrate the opponent. You mentioned James Harden, and he was very good. He got tired. And that's what happens, though, is that these guys are going to get tired, especially when they have to work as hard as James Harden has to work or as hard as LeBron James has to work. So, well, exactly what happened. He got tired, and it wasn't all that shocking. So, he got tired. The Rockets were all watching on the pick and pops, the pick and rolls with Harden. I thought Capella played a good, solid game like he usually does. I thought that nobody else really played that well. Eric Gordon did get 15 points, but he got them all in basically the third quarter, and he wasn't consistent, and nobody else really stepped up for the Rockets in that first game. It was disappointing. If for the Rockets to actually pull this off, even though they are the higher seed because they had more victories during the regular season, they're going to need more from their supporting cast. And if their supporting cast can't pick it up, can't be more effective, and part of it is that they're watching a lot of the dribbling that Harden will do, they're watching a lot of the dribbling that Paul will do, but they need to be involved. They're going to have to be involved. Ariza had a good start, but he went ice cold after his good start. Only finished with 8 points, missed 4 of 5 threes in his 23 minutes. And he picked up 5 fouls, too. He got in foul trouble. P.J. Tucker was a non-entity, 1 point in 34 minutes. That's just impossible. And he's starting for you at the power forward position. That's impossible. And that's the triggering factor right there. Capella, does what he does. You know, he finishes the Harden passes, the Harden dishes, what he drives with slams, 6 of 7, 12 points. He always gives a good effort, 6 rebounds, 3 assists, couple blocks. He always gives you a nice effort. I like him. I like him as a player, and I think he'll continue to improve. So, and I'm not just talking about this year, I'm talking about the future. So that's good. James Harden, 14 of 24. Yeah, I mean, he shot well, 5 of 9 from 3. He was on fire. He was on fire in that first half. He scored a lot of points in that first quarter, knocking down threes, 14 of 24, scored the 41 points in the 35 minutes, 8 of 10 from the free throw line. He always goes to the line a lot. 7 assists, 4 rebounds. He did have 4 turnovers, but he finished about a 7. Look, he's going to give as much as he can give. He's going to have to, because there's no alternative when it comes to James Harden. He's going to give what he can give. The fact that he played 35 of the 48 minutes, he might have to play tonight. He might have to play 40 or 41 minutes. He might have to play that many minutes. And don't forget, if you're a coach, you know, you're D'Antoni, they have the next 3 days off. So there's no reason for Harden not to play 40-plus minutes tonight. As long as he doesn't get into foul trouble, he needs to play as much as possible. Ride the wave as long as your top guns foul trouble. Paul played 38 minutes in the first game. He did get 23 points, but he had to work for them. And the same thing with Harden. They had to work for the points. 23 points, 11 rebounds. Paul was their leading rebounder in game one. He only had 3 assists, but he was their leading rebounder. That can't be. You know, that just can't be. I mentioned the bench. Gordon got 15 points. He got them in a very quick span. Mamute did nothing in 17 minutes. Gerald Green, a couple of threes, but very got taken advantage of defensively against that just mammoth Golden State Warriors scoring with Durant, who led the way with 37. He's just shooting over. It just doesn't matter who guards him. He can shoot over you. He's 7 feet. He lifted at 6'9". He's not known 6'9". He's 7 feet. He can just shoot over you. He's shooting over Harden. Whoever's guarding him, he's just shooting over them, knocking down shots. Nothing bothers him, really. God, you know, I would double. I would double. Get the ball away from him. The only problem with doubling is then it's going to open up for Steph Curry to do damage. Curry was basically a non-entity. He was the third scorer. I think he had 18. He did have 8 assists. So he did. The best play Curry made was defensive play, actually. Steal against Harden, bringing it up, and then made a beautiful save and dish for what was a mammoth dunk by Iguodala. Iguodala's a little old, long in the tooth, but he did have that mammoth dunk. And that was when Golden State was making their big run. And they can make runs. And the thing that really sucked, if you were a Rockets fan, D'Antoni had to use a lot of timeouts in the third quarter. He only had 2 left in the fourth quarter, and it takes away. You know, when you're down to 2 timeouts, it's gonna hurt you. So you got to try to preserve those timeouts. You know, guys like Ryan Anderson and Nene, they're not going to play a lot. They're not fast. They're not fast enough to play. So what does that mean? It means that the Rockets are at a disadvantage. It means that it puts a lot on those top 5. Well, it's really 6 when you include Gordon. It really puts a lot on those guys. They have to play better, obviously. Green just needs to supply offense. So they don't have as much of an edge as they could have. So when Anderson's playing 5 minutes because he can't give you anything defensively if he's knocking down shots. And then he makes 1 move looking for a bailout call in 5 minutes and gives you nothing. It's not going to work. It is not going to work. And a lot of minuses for the Rockets. Just Golden State's got more balance. Klay Thompson, he can just flat out shoot. He can shoot from anywhere. I mean, he took a lot of threes, 6 out of 15. But when he gets his looks, he's going to make. I mean, when he gets enough of those looks, he's going to make them. He wasn't making them early, but once he got into a groove, he did make them. 28 points, 9 for 18, with 15 shots coming from 3 and 6 of his 9 field goals from downtown. And Durant, like I said, he can kill you in the mid-range. He can shoot the 3. He can do it all. I mean, 3 for 6 from downtown, 14 of 27 overall. He's he's one of the best scorers that I've ever seen. He's just so dominant. Shoots over 51% in the first game. Also very good from the free throw line. So, you know, there's not many flaws in Durant's game. Do I think he's a little soft? I've said that before, but it is what it is. They have to make it harder on him somehow. So I don't know how they do that. Iguodala got 11 points, so I don't even think he's that good anymore, but he wound up with 11. Dre Green did have 5 points, but the 9 assists, the 9 rebounds, the nice plus-minus. So, and that's plus 19. He finished plus 19. He was the best. Plus 13 for Klay Thompson. Steph Curry, only 18 points. And that's the scary part if you're rooting for the Rockets here. If you're a JPG, you know, or you're Rob Davis, is Steph Curry going to have another game where he only scores 18 tonight? Yeah, that's the thing that I would be worried about. Curry did have 8 assists, only 1 turnover, and 6 rebounds. So he did other things. Yeah, that's the thing about Steph. You can take away, you can focus and you can take him away, but he could still be a factor in other ways as well. So that's credit to him. I do not know why Steve Kerr played Kevin Looney so many minutes, but he played him 24 minutes. I've never even heard of him, but he was a +6. You know, +6 with him on the floor. Nick Young actually was a factor, hitting 3 tries. Yeah, I didn't think Nick Young even still played. He comes in and hits 3 tries because he's open. He gets open. And Livingston, of course, comes off the bench and gives them 7 points, gives them valuable minutes. Dave West's not really going to play anymore. He's pretty much washed. You know, what it basically comes down to is I like Golden State's starting five overall better than Houston's starting five, and that's a problem. If the Rockets can involve, they can involve more of their guys, then they'd have a chance. Try to establish Capella like they usually do. They like to establish him early, but establish him even more. Gordon. Get him going early. The problem for the Rockets is they're going to be very limited in what they can do, and that is worrisome off the bench. If it's going to be like it was in Game 1, that worries me. They're going to have to make some adjustments to win this game tonight. They're going to have to play better defense, and if the defense was good enough, especially in that second half, the Rockets just did not execute as well. I thought there was too much pressure on James Harden, Chris Paul, and that's just not going to get it done. They need to somehow spread the wealth a little bit. I don't think they're as effective with Harden scoring over 40 points. I think they're more effective with Harden gets less. So if he scored between 25 and 30 points tonight and had double digits, 12, 13 assists, and Paul is getting 18 points and he's distributing the ball more, and they have the other guys knocking down threes, knocking down shots, they'll be more effective. So that's what they're going to need to do to even this series. That is my take on that. Now, let's get to the other game, the other series, Celtics. They're up 2 games to none, and they're up 2 games to none because they're better. They're a better overall team. I mean, top to bottom, look, LeBron is the best in the world. He's the best in the world. And everybody knows that. Everybody expected him to do what he did last night. He wound up with 42 points, his third career triple-double where he had at least 40. You know, honestly, he's asked about it. And do you really think LeBron James cares that he had 42 points and he had 12 assists and 10 rebounds if his team doesn't win? Not going to care because he gets it. He understands that it's about getting the W. And they couldn't have gotten off to a better start. He scored 21 points in the first quarter. He was great in the first quarter, hitting 3-point shots, doing everything. He scored 21 of his team's 27. You know what the problem was? The problem was that despite that, his team was only up by 4 points after one quarter. They got it up to 11 points. But every time they had the opportunity to stretch it, they couldn't do it. The Celtics are just relentless. They're a relentless team. They just continue to pressure. And with J.R. Smith giving them absolutely nothing, just an awful game and a terrible cheap shot of a foul, which should have been a flagrant two and an automatic ejection for shoving Al Horford from behind. Just a dirty play. Kudos to Marcus Smart for stepping up and getting right in the face of J.R. Smith and saying, you know what, there, that's unacceptable. And good to, and good job there by Tristan Thompson keeping him away from J.R. And so nothing further escalated. What it comes down to is they need more from some of their other players. Roddy Hood, 11 minutes, 2 points, 2 shots. Jeff Green, he played 27 minutes. Jeff Green is a guy who can shoot the 3, he can score. He only had 6 points. Kyle Korver. Kyle Korver's a little limited in what he could do. He's a great spot-up shooter. He can't really do much else. He could drive the ball occasionally. The problem is it's going to be hard to drive against Celtics because they're athletic. They play very tough defense, and he has to work harder on his defense, and he's not really good defensively. So when you have to guard Jaylen Brown, when you have to guard Terry Rozier, it's a problem. Tristan Thompson is their third Cavs, and he just got moved back to the starting lineup. He gets most of his points on offensive rebounds, and that's what he does. Kevin Love had a very solid first game, second game actually, 22 points, 9 of 18 shooting. Didn't really shoot the 3 particularly well, but had 15 rebounds. He did what he could do, what he can do. So it's really about the fact that the Celtics have more balance. They could have all 5 starters in double digits. Jason Tatum, he only had 11 points, but he had that one hot stretch where he scored 8 points or 7 or 8 points in just like about a 90-second span where he had a couple of tough drives. Then he knocks down a 3, and just like that, he's got 7 of those 11 points. The crowd's going crazy, and they're back in the game. And they made their push in the second half. Marcus Morris didn't have as big a game, too, but scored 12 points. Plays hard, that's just defense. Horford's such an underrated player because he could shoot from the outside. He could hurt you from the outside if you leave him open with the 3. But he didn't shoot as well. And he's really effective inside. And he's a very good team-oriented guy. He'll grab rebounds. He'll distribute the ball. He does whatever it takes. And he's the veteran. He's the leader of this team. And, of course, you got Jaylen Brown, who has looked very explosive. It looks like the Cavs have nobody that can guard him. They really can't. Especially when he's torching J.R. Smith and just destroying him. 21 in the first game, 23 in the second game. Explosive, challenging LeBron James when LeBron's guarding him because of his speed and his athleticism, hitting 3s, just all over the place. And then, of course, you got Terry Rozier, scary Terry. He wound up with 18, and most of it was in the third quarter when he just erupted, when he scored 11, and he was just doing whatever it took there, making mid-range shots, driving, hitting 3s when they were open. And he's just a really smart, very tough player. You know, the thing about the Celtics team is they're not scared. And, you know, you have Marcus Smart also off the bench, 11 points, but he had 9 assists as well. And LeBron James Love gave a lot of credit to how he plays. And Marcus Smart will give them whatever. He gives them a lot. You know, in terms of defense, in terms of the effort, in terms of the distributing. He's not the prettiest player, but boy, he just fills it up, does a really good job. I mean, when you have Greg McRoe, and Greg McRoe can't guard anybody, but he comes off the bench for 4 points. But you have Aaron Baines, or I like to call him Bane, you know, which is one of JPT's favorite characters from the Batman series, Bane, you know, hitting 3-point shots and scoring 9 points in 17 minutes. Yeah, it's going to be very tough. So they got the edge. They got the edge overall in their starting 5. They got the edge off the bench. And look, it's not a knock on Tyronn Lue. I think he's doing the best he can with his team. And a lot of his guys, I hate to say it, they just did not make that great an effort defensively in the second half, and especially from the guard area. And that was really disappointing. Well, J.R. Smith and George Hill just were not enemies, and they were awful. And, you know, Brad Stevens is a terrific coach. He talked about weathering the storm. They weathered the storm, and he felt very good with where they are. And they took over the game really in the third quarter, and they turned it around. They turned a what was it, 6 point or 7 point deficit at half into a double digit lead. And it just says a lot about the Celtics' character. And when the Cavs did cut it, you know, to 95-89, a LeBron James 3 point play, they did make the cut, and the Celtics came back out, and Horford drew a foul and hit 2 free throws, and the Celtics then went on. I think they went 7-0 after that, and suddenly it was back up to 13, and the game was over. All but the side, and LeBron James talked about that in the post game. There's just a lot of things to like about how the Celtics play. They're very team-oriented. They're very unselfish. These guys like to spread the wealth. They're athletic. They're faster than the Cavs. And that's what it really comes down to. Yeah, and the thing is that both teams went cold for a stretch in the fourth quarter, and that was the opportunity for the Cavs maybe to make that push. You know, it was about a nine-point or 10-point deficit. There was an opportunity. The Celtics went cold. They started missing shots, but the Cavs weren't able to take advantage. And that when the opponent who's better than you starts missing shots, you know, if they're a little inexperienced, that's when you got to take advantage. And they weren't able to do it. There were a couple of LeBron James 3-point plays, but he lost his legs and wasn't able to shoot the three. There were a lot of wild misses by the Cavs, and that was their chance, and they weren't able to cash in. So I don't know what you can expect. There are 3 days before game three that's in Cleveland on Saturday. So plenty of time to recoup, plenty of time to prepare. It's just this, you know, can they hold serve? And I think the most important thing is just win game three. They can't think about winning two games. You got to think about winning one game first. So get the first game and then worry about the second game. And if they could do that, then they at least give themselves an opportunity. You know, in terms of the hockey, so we're finishing up almost overtime, and I should have realized this would probably happen. I'll just talk briefly about the Lightning. They knew what they had to do. They were terrible in game two. They've been badly outplayed by the Caps. The Caps didn't help themselves. They took some penalties, and you can't take penalties against the Lightning because their power play is just too good. Stamkos with another just ridiculous one-timer, and I think five of his 6 goals have come via the power play. And he's such a great finisher from that area. So he's going to do damage there. And Kucherov also scored on the power play, and Kucherov, you know, he has about as much of even strength. But he has this one-timer with the release from that tough angle down low. And he always gets everything on it. And the scary part is that it's always top shelf. I mean, and the Lightning had some success going top shelf against Holtby. Holtby did not have the best games. So they're going to have to be better. Well, they're going to need better from Holtby, but they can't just expect to come out and think that they're going to win. I think maybe they expect it to just come out there and win game three because they won the first two games. You can't look, you have the home crowd, your crowd's going to be into it, but you got to be better than how they were. You did not perform well enough. And that's disappointing. That's really disappointing from a capital standpoint. Lightning played a better game. Point scored a fluky goal. The coverage on Hedman's goal, even strength, was terrible. They just let him score on a wide open play, which really put it out of reach, made it 3-0, put them in a huge deficit, a huge hole from Kucherov and Palat. And that was the second even strength goal for the Lightning in the series. Connolly got one back. But Connolly's pretty effective on that third line. Make a 3-1, but the crusher really was the goal that Holtby allowed to Braden Point. It was a nothing play. Holborn gets a shot blocked. The puck takes a weird deflection or hop. Johnson tries to get the shot off, can't. Point does get the shot off, and somehow the short side with like no room, no real estate. And Point is really good at finishing plays, and you know, he's really is the Lightning's go-to guy at even strength, and that really finished off the Cavs. That made it 4-1, deflated the crowd, took them completely out of it. You know, no, I mean, even though Kuznetsov got his ninth, it was, you know, in the third period late. The Caps were never going to recover from that. And even though the Caps had 38 shots to Lightning's 23, but the Lightning don't need a lot of chances to score. Vasilevsky had a much better game, bounced back, made the big saves. After allowing 10 goals in the first two games, he bounced back. Hedman had a goal and two assists, so he had his breakout game. You know, Kylie's got 8-game point streak going. And I still don't think he's played that great, but you can't argue with the numbers. So now the interest for me to see is how did the Caps bounce back from this? How can the Caps bounce back? You know, Ovechkin's going to have to be better. He had 9 shots, but he didn't have any points. So don't want the series to go back to Tampa tied 2-2. They want to make sure that they win game 4, because then all the pressure goes back on them. Even though the light pressure would still be on the Lightning to hold serve and win game 5, you know, you had 2 games to lead, so all the pressure's really on Washington here. You know, and the Lightning finally played a good game. So the pressure is on the Caps, though. You know, don't let it slide away. You know, win this next game, and you're up 3-1. And then the Lightning have to win 3 in a row to beat you, you know, to get to the Stanley Cup. So, and the Lightning are good enough to do it, but the Caps, the Caps are just going to have to come with, you know, the kind of same kind of effort they came with in the first 2 games. They can do that. I'm pretty confident that they can come back and win game 4. We'll see what happens with that. Now, in terms of the big game tonight, we've got a tie series between 2 very evenly matched teams. I had a feeling Vegas would bounce back. You know, even though they lost the first game and everybody was writing them off, I didn't feel that way at all. I mean, I've watched enough of Vegas to know that they're not going to back off. They didn't look intimidated in the first game, even though they were overwhelmed for a little stretch in that first period when they fell behind by 3 goals. But they kept battling. They didn't avoid scrums. They delivered their own hits. And they weren't bad after the first period. They were very competitive. It was very close. So they were very competitive. They lost the game 4-2. But they played better as the game wore on. So I was expecting Vegas to play a much better game 2 win. They did. They won the game 3-1. Marchessault, how about Marchessault? I mean, he never really got a chance. Never got a chance with the Columbus Blue Jackets. I mean, believe it or not, the Rangers had him in their system, and they never recalled him. Shocking. And the Panthers just decided to throw him away, along with Riley Smith, and that's 2/3 from Vegas. So top line with Wild Bill Carlson, who was just unbelievable, and Columbus basically threw him away as well. So Marchessault is terrific. I mean, really, he scores that clutch goal after the Jets finally get a goal, one that Fleury would have liked back, Kyle Connor on the power play. And Fleury made a lot of great saves, but he lets a Connor sharp angle shot go right through the wickets. And it's 2-1, even though Vegas was dominating and Nate Schmidt was playing terrific defense. Pierre McGuire was basically in love with that, but of course that's Pierre McGuire. But they played, you know, they played so much harder. They were so much more effective. Thomas Tatar came into the lineup. You know, he's been a terrible acquisition, and since they got him from Detroit, he's really done nothing. He scored like 4 total goals, but he scored a goal. He came in for David Perron, who hasn't been effective. So, and that's the thing I like. That's one of the things I like about Gerard Gallant, is that he's willing to bench guys. So he benched Perron, put up a huge amount of points this year, especially assists, but he wasn't doing well in the playoffs, so he benches him. And he puts in Thomas Tatar, who was a bust mostly and hadn't really been playing. And he, what happens? He scores the first goal of the game. He missed the first chance off a Teodor setup, but then able to bank in home the second one by Connor Hellebuck and quiet the crowd. And that Jonathan Marchessault goal, that first one when Riley Smith made it 2-0, took the crowd completely out of it. They played a great second period. Even though they didn't score, they really shut down Winnipeg, frustrated them, and played more of a Vegas-style game. But by that, they hounded Winnipeg. They didn't give them a lot of room. And you can't give Winnipeg anything because Winnipeg's that talented. Now, the third period, they took a penalty, and Kyle Connor was eventually able to score. But I never got the sense that Winnipeg was going to tie this game up. And even though Marchessault came right back, and that was a huge shift right there, and of course it was from the top line, Wild Bill and Riley Smith combining, and Marchessault combining to force the turnover and spring Marchessault for the break, and that was a beautiful move. He just goes, he fakes that forehand, goes to the backhand, sweeps it to open up the final, sweeps it, and goes five-hole quickly through the wickets of Hellebuyck. And that was it. That game was over. And they wound up tying the series. And now, for the first time ever, the same expansion Vegas Golden Knights are hosting a game in the conference final. Their first year of existence. And here they are. Game three. Series tied at one. Game three to start in about half an hour. And that's going to be very interesting. You know, Winnipeg's got the best home crowd. Well, Vegas has got a great home crowd as well. So he certainly put on a good show, as you would all expect Vegas to do. And it's going to be fun to watch. So it's going to – I hate the fact that these two games are going off at the same time because I really want to see how the Rockets respond. But I also – I'm not going to miss Vegas coming out for the opening because I love watching the opening. You know, they don't do intros in the NBA playoffs anymore, and I think that sucks. I think they should do intros. I don't know why they did away with that. I always loved watching intros. That was always fun. As a Knicks fan, watching the Knicks come out in the 90s, watching the Bulls come out to the Ricky the Dragon Steamboat music, where you had the chills, and even though I hated the Bulls, but they had the best intro. I loved watching the intros. And for some reason, they just did away with it. I really don't understand why. But when it comes to the NHL, you get the feel. You get the atmosphere. They show you the home team coming out to the crowd. In Vegas, they do it a little different. They have, like, their own mascots. They have somebody ring, you know, basically ring a bell or play a trumpet, whatever it is. They have Roenick do it. I mean, Roenick's hilarious. I'm sure Roenick will be in Vegas for this game. They'll probably be hanging out with fans or dressed as a Golden Knight or whatever. But it's very entertaining to watch. I enjoy it. I enjoy that stuff. And I wish the Rangers had a little bit of that. I understand the Rangers and their tradition. But they're so dull. They're so dull. I mean, they charge a ridiculous amount to most fans, and they've priced out most fans. You could at least make it interesting. Give the fans something. I mean, that's what I like about these other places. It's not as corporate, and the fans are just – there's so much more into it. So it's a lot of fun to watch. All right, I'll make some picks here since this is just a solo show. As much as I want to go off the Rockets to win tonight, I just think Golden State's better. I think they're a better team. And I don't want to agree with Charles Barkley. Charles Barkley said, they had Clay Thompson as a guest, and Clay always dodges him because he likes to get food. And Barkley's like, Golden State in three, which means he has them sweeping now. Can the Rockets win game two? They could win game two. I just think the Warriors are better. If the Warriors do not let up, they're going to win this game. I'll go 112-106. I'll go 112-106 Golden State. I'm sure JPG would go with the Rockets to even the series, and Rob will definitely go with the Rockets. Brian thinks it's over. Brian thinks there's no way the Warriors could be stopped. That's typical San Juan. Game three of this series in Vegas, Winnipeg-Vegas. Well, I think Vegas is a great home team. They are. But Winnipeg's got the skill level. They got the speed. They got the size to bounce back. And I think this is one of those series that's going to go back and forth. So I'm going to give the edge to Winnipeg. I think Winnipeg will win tonight's game. I'm going to go off a score of 4-2. And maybe he did have an assist last game. Maybe Ehlers finally scores a goal. And I think that Scheifele will be involved because whenever Winnipeg wins this postseason, he's involved. And maybe one of the defensemen, whether it's Buff or it's Trouba or Tyler Meyer or somebody else. So I think Winnipeg can bounce back and win this game. So I'll go 4-2. I'll go against Vegas. I think it's one of those series where the teams are just going to go back and forth. So I'm taking Winnipeg tonight. I'm obviously thinking Vegas will win game 4, and it'll go back to Winnipeg tied 2. So that's where I'm at. All right, so we got a few minutes left. I'm just going to do a few more minutes since we are in overtime. Derek Felix of Hard Hits Network, a Hard Hits preview edition, Hard Hits pregame. And I've done NBA, I've done NHL. I don't really care too much about the whole sports gambling being legalized. I mean, I don't see the big deal. I just don't. The only thing I would say is, you know, that you're going to be able to go and place bets, you know, out in New Jersey, which is fun. You know, I could have to do offshore accounts and maybe I will do a little bit on it, but I'm not much of a gambler. But I don't think it's that big a deal. But for like the addictive gambler, it just gives them more options. And so from that standpoint, that's a negative. That's a negative for me. Because if you're like compulsive. If you're a compulsive gambler, I think that's a problem. That's a big problem. And if you're just getting into it, you know, maybe you did some of the other things or whatever. But what would I say? Just be careful. Be careful. You know, don't rely on gambling. Yeah, it's like there's that line in Lenny Cook's story. When Lenny Cook was, you know, a hot shot top prospect, one of the top prospects of the ABC D-camp. And Kobe Bryant makes an appearance. And Kobe says to the camp, which included LeBron, that's a junior who became the best player of that camp, Amari Stoudemire, Carmelo Anthony, and of course Lenny Cook, who didn't make it and got bad advice and went for the money. Don't rely on basketball for your happiness because it's not going to happen. And Lenny Cook out that line, when are you going to play me? And Kobe Bryant says, I'm going to play you in various ways. And I almost think that was symbolic of that whole documentary, which was sad, but it was interesting, too. I think there was a good ending to it because Lenny Cook did okay for himself. You know, he became a full-time dad, and he's always been there for his family, and he became a cook. He went from a basketball player to a cook, and he stayed true to himself and true to his wife and to his family and to his kids. So, and the fact that he had the meet and greet with at the Knicks game, the last time the Knicks were healthy when they were in the playoffs, like against Boston, met up with Carmelo Anthony there, and of course Amari. I thought that was pretty cool. And Joaquin Noah, too. That was great. I thought that was great. And Joaquin Noah produced it. So that was a great documentary. And this really applies to gambling. Don't rely on betting for your happiness, because it's not going to happen. Don't rely on gambling for your happiness, because it's not going to happen. Because most likely you're going to wind up in debt, or you're going to wind up probably doing more damage to yourself than you should. So, even though it's legalized and you may not have to worry about as many bookies, you could still wind up putting yourself in big trouble. All right. Charles Barkley, Michael Jordan, okay, are examples of that. Okay? So, I mean, every once in a while, you know, people like to make friendly wagers. I've made friendly wagers with John, with Brian, but they're friendly. The difference. So, you know, it's different. It's different than deciding, I'm going to go all in Yeah, so just be careful. That's the one thing I'll say on that. These notes do have a little time left over. Is there anything else? Baseball? There's rain. It's just, we went from this just ridiculous humidity to lots of rain. And I'm happy that we got the rain because we did it in the worst way. But we're not going to be seeing any sun probably for a while. So it's probably not going to be sunny until almost Tuesday. So we're not going to see sun. The Yanks and Nats had their game suspended because they were tied at 3. Then they were going to try to play today. That was never going to happen in Washington, D.C. It wasn't going to happen. So that's pushed back to next month. Didi Gregorius is not hitting at all. So he went from being like MVP Didi to being average Didi who can't hit for average. And all of a sudden he's down to like 253 and just can't do anything right now. I think eventually he'll step out of. He's too good. The Dodger watch continues with the Dodgers losing to the Waffle Bar once again. They're down 5-1 right now in Miami. Believe it or not, if the Marlins, Derek Jeter Marlins, who cut payroll and have no fans, if they win that game, they're 16-26. Dodgers lose that game, they're 16-26. Yeah, the Dodgers have a lot of guys out. I understand all that. But I don't know what they'll decide to do. Will they decide to make a change? Is it Dave Roberts' fault? Probably not, but they're really bad right now. One of the cool stories, Stephen Piscotty. Stephen Piscotty, he played for the Cardinals, but he had a parent that was sick. So he wanted to be closer to home, so he got traded to Oakland, and he got to be with his parent for one last time. It was his dad. And what happens? He came back last night. Comes back last night. And what does he do? First at bat, if that way. First at bat back from bereavement. Then he hits a home run. Crushes a ball over the green monster or to over that green monster, and it was just crushed. And that's got to be one of the coolest things that you could ever see. We've seen it before. You know, we've seen these kind of things happen before. Ortiz said he was going to hit a home run. Well, Vaughn said he was going to hit a home run. He hit like the two for those kids back when he played for the Red Sox, back when he was like an MVP. The Stephen Piscotty story is a little more emotional for me. You know, what he was able to come back from and what he was able to do. I think just it's great. It's a great story. I mean, hit that emotional home run. It's an awesome story. And you know how much of that. It was his mom, actually, Gretchen, that passed away after she had a 1-year battle with ALS. So Luke Gehrig's disease. And he crossed the plate and put his hand over his heart. And that is just, that's one of those moments that you know, you can't say enough about. And Bob Melvin said, to hit a home run in his first at-bat like this, something in the air, probably Gretchen. It was like a walk-off. The guys were bracing when he got in the dugout. They wound up winning the game, too. It's been an emotional week, but Scotty said, courtesy of MLB.com, I've been a little cried out, so I didn't tear up or anything. It felt real good knowing my family was watching and knowing my mom was watching. Coming around third, just immediately started thinking of my mom. I put my hand over my chest like she would, too. And it's kind of going to be my thing going forward. Terrific. Terrific moment right there. That's what makes sports to me. Those kind of moments. That's special right there. So, you know, it's really special. The Mets, they're not particularly good. I mean, they had a laugher against Toronto yesterday. Marlo Garris had a big game, and they won pretty easily. Syndergaard still only went 6 innings. So he's taking a step back. And then today, Wheeler, after he had a great start, what happens in his start today, he gets bombed. Blue Jays, they were up 12-0. They went up to 12-1. Nemo hit a 2-out home run. That otherwise would have been a shutout. You know, gets up 6 runs in 4 innings, 2 home runs. He could have 7 strikeouts. But this is the thing about young pitchers, is that not every young pitcher is going to be a star. A long time ago, Zach Wheeler was a first-round pick of the Giants. He was. He was a first-round pick.
Traded for Carlos Beltran. He was going to be the next guy.
He was going to be, and that was going to be the trade that really started the Mets in the right direction. So, but it hasn't materialized. He's had injuries. He's had some setbacks. At least they didn't make the trade with the Milwaukee Brewers for Carlos Gomez. You know, they made the trade for Cespedes. At least Cespedes was able to do what he did early on and get the Mets into that playoffs in 2015 and have that big run. Now, Cespedes since then, even after he resigned, is a guy that gets hurt a lot. So it's not great. It's not the greatest thing for the Mets, for the Mets fan. And obviously they need Cespedes on the field. And they need him in the lineup because most of their guys are not hitting. So problematic for the Mets going forward. The truth is this, and it's an easy truth.
They need Jay Bruce and they need Michael Conforto to hit. If neither hit, then they're not going to have much success as a team. They're going to wind up finishing under 500. And they will finish in fourth place in the division. So even after whatever you want to call it, their hot start, their 11-1 start, the Mets record since then is 9-18. So actually, no, it's 8. Oh, no, yeah, it is 9. I'm sorry, it's 9-18. I mean, they made the trading Harvey for Mesoraco. Mesoraco will help them. He's a guy who could catch almost every day. As long as he stays healthy, he'll hit some home runs. So he'll home runs, help them out. Harvey made his second start today. Not as good as his first start. His first start, he only went 4 innings. He was on a pitch count and only allowed 1 hit, gave up no runs. The Reds won the game. Today, he pitched at the Giants. The Reds have actually been winning games since they faced the Mets. So Harvey got great run support. Second straight game where he's gotten big run support. Harvey did not pitch that well, but I think he got the W. No, actually, they only went 4 innings, so they took him out after 4. He gave up 3 runs, 3 earned, a home run. The home run looked well. That traveled pretty well by Brandon Belt. He belted it. No pun intended there. Probably about a 93-mile-an-hour fastball that was middle of the plate, middle in, and he just hit it into all his right field seats. About 403 feet. He gave up. So Harvey got hit around. He got knocked around pretty good in the 4 innings. 7 hits, 3 earned, 5 strikeouts. The walk of his strikeouts, his curveball. His curveball was actually pretty good. He could have given up more runs. The Reds bullpen did a good job, though. Peralta, 2 scoreless. Hughes, 2 scoreless. And Iglesias, his 8th save. And the Reds win at the disappointing Giants. And see what else is new there. Then they win 6-3. Adam Duval, the ex-Giant, hit a home run, a 3-run home run in the first inning. Scooter Gennett, one of the more underrated utility guys who seems to always produce, hit his 7th home run, and looks like he's on his way to another big year for the Cincinnati Reds, who aren't particularly good, but they have guys that can hit the ball out of the ballpark. You know, Joey Votto, of course, usually always in that MVP running. Gennett continues to – it's funny, the Brewers dropped him because they didn't really have room for him. But then Gennett goes to Cincinnati, and he's an excellent player for them. Schebler and Duval. So they have guys that can hit the ball out of the park. And they have speedsters like Hamilton, who doesn't hit for much average, but can steal a lot of bases. Peraza, very similar as well. So, but they don't have much pitching. So the idea of picking up Harvey, okay. They want to take a shot at him and see if they can turn things, see if he can turn things around. We'll see. We'll see how it goes there. On the Giants side, Dolph hit the home run, but they just don't have enough pitching. Suarez took the loss, and their hitting's going to be up and down. McCutcheon, you know, it's not the same McCutcheon, so he'll be streaky. He had his return to Pittsburgh. The Dolph Pirate fans gave him a standing ovation. That was terrific. Longoria, not the same player either. I do not know why they made that trade. I would not have done it myself. We got the Braves. They're continuing to play pretty well. They blew the second game to the Cubs. The Cubs with a couple of two-out runs. Addison Russell, or Addy Russell as I like to call him, tied it up. And a game-winning hit also. I can't remember who got the game-winning hit. But the Cubs 22-17, the Braves 25-16, and NL best. It's 1-1 right now in the fifth inning. So they're battling. As I watched some old-school Britney Spears on a TV classic, and God, is there a hotter pop star than her? No. Even though she's not the best singer, but God, she still looks great. So God bless her. The pitching matchup in that is Chatwood against McCarthy. Brandon McCarthy was still pitching. Ozzie Albies continues to be a big factor for the Braves with the 13 home runs. He's got 15 doubles also. A lot of extra base hits for him. Freeman quietly has 32 RBIs, and we know Freeman can really hit. So, but you're not going to have Yankee baseball probably for a little while. Actually, they do play in Houston the next couple, so they probably will be able to play. They probably will play in some of the games. So, and the Mets are the Mets. I mean, I don't really know what else. I don't have anything to add there. That's going to do it for the show. Enjoy the games. If I'm up to it, maybe we do a brief overtime segment after tonight's game. But I do have school tomorrow morning, so we'll see if I feel up to it. All right, that's going to do it. This is Derek Felix signing off. Please make sure you check out the podcast for any of the Hard Hits shows on the Hard Hits Network on Block Talk Radio. And thank you again, and enjoy Game 2, Warriors and Rockets, and enjoy Game 3 on NBC Network between the Winnipeg Jets and the Vegas Golden Knights in Vegas. T-Mobile, the picks are, again, the Warriors, 112-106. And I'm taking the Winnipeg Jets to win Game 3, 4-2. All right, good night, or I'll see you later. See you later. That's what we'll say. All right, see you later, guys. All right, see you later. Bye.